Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Braxton by K.C. Lynn, narrated by Teddy Hamilton and Callie Dalton. Prologue. Braxton, 13 years old. Deep in the woods, next to a dwindling fire, the stars blanket the dark sky, making the universe seem promising when in reality it holds nothing but pain and hardships. At least for my brothers and me. Knox lies asleep on the other side of the warm flames while Justice leans back against a tree, carving a stick with his pocket knife as he keeps watch. We take shifts, knowing someone has to be on the lookout at all times. You never know what enemy will strike next, and for the three of us we can never be too careful. It's been 6 months since we ran away from the group home we all met in, escaping that sadistic bastard Hobbs, the head guard who enjoyed inflicting torture on defenseless kids. Thanks to my brothers, he will never hurt another child the way he hurt me all those months ago. That night, we fled with nothing but the clothes on our backs, and even that was sparse. It's a decision I don't regret. But on nights like this, where the hunger pains are strong and defeat feels all too close, I wonder if we are any better off. Every morning, we wake up hoping to survive another day. Fighting to eat, sleep, and stay warm. Stealing food, clothes, or these sleeping bags we are in now. It's a constant struggle. Then I remember the beatings and know that anywhere is better than where we were, including the streets. With sleep feeling so far away, I give up trying and climb out of my sleeping bag to relieve Justice from his position. "What are you doing?" he asks as I take the spot next to him, his attention remaining on his steady hands. "I can't sleep. You may as well go ahead and try." He finally lifts his head, sparing me a glance. "What's wrong?" I shrug, not wanting to burden him with my dark thoughts. "Talk to me, Brax." I relent with a heavy breath. "I don't know, man. Sometimes I wonder if we'll ever be better than this. If we will ever know what it's like to live a normal life." "We're already better than this, and one day we'll prove it to the rest of the world." Despite his reassurance, I see the same worry in his eyes, the uncertainty of our future. Unless we catch a break, I don't see how we will ever get off these streets.
"Besides, we have something that a lot of other people don't have."
"What's that? One pair of underwear?" I joke, but it falls flat.
"No, each other."
His words slam into my heart with a powerful truth. He's right. I wouldn't trade him or Knox for a warm meal or an even warmer bed. My brothers are the family I never had. My own mother tossed me away like yesterday's trash, whereas Justice and Knox would give up everything they have for me, just as I would for them. They might only be a year older than me, but they have taken on the role as my big brothers. They've taken care of me just as they promised they would when we made that pact 6 months ago. At times, I've caught them giving up their own food that we managed to steal just so I could have more. Terrible circumstances brought us together, but destiny gave us so much more. Fate made us brothers. Loyalty made us family. I'll happily starve for the rest of my life if it means getting to keep the both of them forever. A soft groan penetrates our conversation, the sound trailing into a tortured whimper. Both Justice and I look over at Knox to find him tossing and turning with yet another nightmare. He gets them often. Whatever torments him is the same all the time, something he keeps buried deep inside. It eats away at his soul, haunting him on the darkest nights. Justice and I have shared where we come from and how we landed in that group home, but not Knox. He's told us some of the shitty foster homes he's been in, but never anything about his birth parents. Anytime we broach the subject, a stark pain enters his eyes, demons like I've never seen racing to the surface. Something worse than what Justice and I have faced, and we have faced some pretty horrific shit. I might not remember my birth mother, but I know what it's like to be beaten within an inch of my life, to be locked in a dark closet for days without food or water by people who were supposed to give you a home. We all have pasts that haunt us, but I have a feeling whatever torments my brother in those nightmares is beyond anything we can imagine. When his thrashing becomes worse, Justice gets up and walks over to him. He bends down carefully, waking him with a gentle hand on his shoulder. My brother does not like to be touched. He flinches at the very thought. Any physical contact from even Justice and me is minimal and hesitant at best. His affliction and fear
is another reason why I'm not sure I want to know what his nightmares are about. Knox, man, wake up. No. The one word falls helplessly from his mouth as he's lost in the darkness that holds him prisoner. Just when I thought it couldn't get worse, his body begins convulsing violently. His desperate screams for help pierce the night as his hands claw and scratch at the air. Justice grabs his shoulders, pinning him down as his own panic rises. Wake the fuck up! Knox comes awake on a roar, his fists striking out as he knocks Justice on his back, coming over top of him. I shove to my feet, ready to jump in, when Justice finally gets the upper hand, throwing Knox off. Stop! It's me, man! Justice! Knox snaps out of it, his shoes kicking up dirt as he scrambles backwards. Both Justice and I watch as he pushes to his feet, his haunted eyes wandering the dark as he tries to grasp reality. His chest heaves, body damp with sweat, while he stares back at us in terror. It's all right, brother. Justice coaxes gently, as if trying to calm a wild animal. It's going to be okay. Knox opens his mouth to speak, but quickly closes it. It isn't long before his fear morphs into something else entirely, despair gripping his face. She wasn't supposed to love me like that. The revelation falls into a gut-wrenching sob, the anguish sending him to his knees. My thundering heart sinks straight to my stomach. Justice and I share a look, our horror reflecting the others. He moves first, while I remain frozen, too scared to move, too scared to breathe. He wraps an arm around Knox's shoulder, reeling him in close as he whispers soothing words. It's that rare touch that eventually has my feet moving. Swallowing hard, I sit on the other side of Knox, my hand going to his shoulder as he continues to sob into his knees. The sound of his grief makes my own eyes burn. If I could take his pain away and carry it as my own, I would. But I can't. No one can. That night, my brother told us a tale so horrific, so vile and twisted, it tarnished a part of my own soul, changing everything I thought I knew about the ugly world we lived in. I was so sure I had faced all the monsters this life had to offer. But I was wrong. So very wrong. Knox encountered a far greater evil than either of us could comprehend, and it broke him beyond repair. From that moment forward, Justice and I vowed he would never know fear and pain like that again. He would never be poisoned by someone's touch because we would be there to protect him. From that moment forward, our bond became more than a pact. It became indestructible.
Chapter 1 Alice, present day. Bound and gagged, my broken body thrashes violently with every bump the vehicle encounters. Agony sears the flesh beneath my skin, as the dirty, rough carpet scratches my tear-stained cheek. No matter how hard I fight to escape the enclosed space, it's no use. There's no way out. Darkness taunts my conscience, threatening to sweep me into its deadly clutches. I now realize this is it. That my time on this earth has finally come to an end. Most people are scared to die, but not me. I pray for it, yearn for its peace. All I want is to be with my mother and the angels, rather than the monster I've been forced to endure since her death. The blood that pumps to my heart slows with fear when I feel the vehicle come to a stop. Seconds later, the trunk pops open, revealing a black sky and full moon. Everything is eerily quiet. Only the distant sound of nature can be heard. Until the whistling starts, a bone-chilling melody that haunts me at every turn. His shadow appears like a grim reaper, the face of pure evil. He holds a crowbar, slapping the hard metal against his palm with a spine-stiffening sound.
Time's up, Alice.
My body trembles uncontrollably as he solidifies what I already suspected. Sinister eyes peer down at me, as a vicious smile curls the edge of his lips.
Your death will be my lure, and I will finally get my revenge.
Revenge. It's what has driven every sadistic move he has ever made. A revenge that stole years of my life, and now someone else will suffer the same fate. His smirk vanishes, a cold, hard look entering his eyes as he raises the crowbar.
Payback. Is going to be so fucking sweet.
Without another word, he brings the hard steel down on my body, plummeting me into complete and utter darkness.
Chapter 2. Braxton. Sweat trickles down my spine, the hot sun searing me through my clothes as I ride the tractor through the thick crop, helping my father prepare for the coming fall. Despite the early morning, I can't help but appreciate the acres of land that I've been lucky enough to call home since I was 14 years old, all because of one lone farmer took in three homeless teenage boys who sought shelter in his barn on a cold, rainy night. We went from the streets, fighting every second to survive, to getting the home and family we had always longed for. Which is exactly why each of us is up at the ass crack of dawn, busting our asses to help maintain what will always be home. We might not share the same DNA, or even the same skin color, but we are stronger than any of those bound by blood. You fuck with one, you fuck with us all. Something the founding fathers of our small historic town found out the hard way when they decided to threaten my father and our home, all because of the millions of dollars of oil buried beneath this soil. Not many are still alive to tell about it, and it set a precedence for anyone else stupid enough to fuck with my family. Veering right, I bypass Knox from where he stands in the crop, a cigarette dangling from his mouth as he hand rakes the leftovers. I lift my coffee mug, giving him a smug smile that earns me the finger. I chuckle, not the least bit apologetic that it's his sorry ass doing the hard labor today. It's only fair since I got stuck doing it last time. As I near the edge of the property line, something snags my attention. A flash of color out in the ditch. A scowl morphs on my face, the crumpled form bringing me to a stop. Shutting off the tractor, I jump down and head in that direction. The back of my neck begins to tingle. Tension winding through my body with every weighted step. It isn't until I'm a few feet away that I make out long, blonde hair and bare legs. What the fuck? Adrenaline spikes in my veins, propelling me forward. The sight I come upon stops me dead in my tracks. A young woman lies half naked and severely beaten, her wrists bound and nightgown partly torn from her black and blue body. Jesus. The one word barely makes it past the bile inching up my throat. I drop down next to her, feeling for a pulse. Seconds later, she stirs with life, a soft, painful moan escaping her cracked lips. Hey, can you hear me? Her swollen eyes flutter open, revealing the most startling blue irises I've ever seen. The contrast is so unique I find myself ripped from the horror of this moment. They're as light as glass, yet blue as the ocean, submerging me in a sea of emotions I can't understand. It's you, she whispers, surprise and recognition dawning on her battered face. I blink down at her, having no idea who the hell she is. You have to run? The warning is mumbled on a fearful whimper, her weak voice threading through shallow breaths. He's coming for you. It's the last she speaks before falling back into unconsciousness, her body going limp. Shoving aside all of my unanswered questions, I sling her bound wrists over my neck, cradling her broken body in my arms, and climb to my feet. I forego the tractor, knowing it'll take too much time, and run back on foot to the house. Just as I come up to the gravel pathway, I spot my father heading for the barn. Dad! The alarm in my voice stops him mid-stride. He turns to see what I have in my arms, concern bringing him forward. Son, what in high heaven? Get the truck. We need to get her to the hospital now. Without further question, he races for his pickup. Justice comes running up on my left, shock twisting his expression when he sees what I carry. What the fuck, Brax? Call Craig, I order, talking about the sheriff who also happens to be a friend. Tell him to send a crew out here. She was next to the culvert on the left sector. He reaches for his phone, dialing quickly as he heads for the house. And Justice, he turns back, his hard gaze meeting mine. Keep a close eye on Ryan and Hannah. I think someone left her for us to find. The knowledge burns within as I remember the last of her words to me. His jaw flexes at the information. After a hard nod, he continues to his wife and daughter, phone against his ear as he awaits an answer. When my father pulls up next to me, I climb into the back seat holding the young woman close. Tires spin on gravel as the truck surges forward. Talk to me, son. My dad starts calmly, a hell of a lot calmer than I feel. Tell me what happened.
She was just lying there. My words are barely audible as I try to make sense of it all. I gaze down at her battered face, taking in golden hair that's stained with blood, and feel something dark take hold inside of me. Behind all the bruises, she looks young, maybe early 20s. She's small in stature, her broken body the most fragile thing I've ever held. My mind races with all the things that could have happened to her, none of them good. We arrive at the hospital almost 15 minutes later, much quicker than waiting for an ambulance. I charge through the emergency doors, calling out for help. A nurse rushes over to me, rolling a bed with her. Shock grips her face when she gets a look at the bound girl. "What on earth?" "I found her like this," I rush to explain. "She has a pulse, but it's weak." Just as I lay the young woman down on the bed, she stirs to consciousness again. Her eyes open, meeting mine for another time-stopping second.
"Please, don't leave me."
The plea quivers past her lips. I reach for one of her battered hands, being pulled in by a force I can't explain. Before I can make contact, another nurse runs over with an IV pole, pushing me back. She begins roughly working to free the woman of her confines, aggressive enough that it drags a painful moan from the woman's throat. Her eyes roll into the back of her head as she loses consciousness again. "Be careful with her," I snap, knocking the nurse's hands away. "Can't you see she's hurt enough, goddammit?" Her flinty gaze lifts to mine, disapproval reflecting back at me. It's a look my brothers and I get often in this town. Most of the time it doesn't bother me, but right now it does because I have no doubt where her thoughts are.
"Stay out of our way, Mr. Creed, and let us do our job."
Both nurses begin rolling the bed down the hall as they call for a doctor. I follow suit, refusing to break the promise I just made until the first nurse stops me cold, placing a hard hand on my chest.
"You will wait out here," she orders stiffly.
"Forget it, lady, I'm not leaving her."
"You are not allowed in this room. If you even attempt it, I will call security and have you removed from this hospital."
"That's not necessary." My father comes to stand next to me, his hand landing on my shoulder. "Come on, son. Let them do their job. Let them help her." I hold the nurse's disdainful glare and lean in close. Only then does some of her resolve slip. "If she isn't breathing after you're done with her, you won't be either." Her eyes narrow further, but it does nothing to cover the fear that's there.
"Go have a seat. I'm sure the police will have questions for you."
She storms into the hospital room, slamming the door shut in my face. It takes everything in me not to charge through it. Consequences be damned. "Come on, boy." My father places his hand on my back. "Let's go wait for Craig to arrive." I allow him to pull me into the waiting area, but I'm too restless to sit down. My feet pace a hole in the floor, my thoughts running wild as the woman's earlier warning rattles in my head. "You have to run. He's coming for you." I have no clue who she's talking about, but I am going to find out, and when I do, the bastard will feel the wrath of my vengeance. A painful hour passes before Craig finally shows up. The downfall, he brings Russell Pierce with him, a deputy who worked closely with the prior sheriff, Totter. I can't stand the prick. He's as arrogant as Totter was, and I have no doubt he's just as corrupt. My brothers and I went to school with him, and he's always been an asshole. "What in the hell is going on at the Creed farm this morning?" Craig says in greeting, exchanging a handshake with my father, then me. I forego one with Pierce, as he does me, our hatred for one another mutual. My father, on the other hand, is more polite and extends his hand. Pierce stares down at it like it's poison because he's a racist fuck, always has been. I shoot him a look, almost hoping he doesn't accept it so I have a reason to knock him out. It would be a good way to unleash this anger I have spinning through me. Eventually he accepts it, but it's stiff and quick. "Did justice fill you in?" I ask, my attention solely on Craig. "The little information he could. Why don't you start from the beginning?" Collecting my thoughts, I explain how I found her, but am unable to offer much more than he already had. "We were hoping you'd have some answers for us," my father says. "Have your deputies found anything?" "Not yet. No purse or wallet, no car nearby if there was a crash." "It wasn't a crash," I say with certainty. "How do you know that?" I go on to tell him what she told me during those few seconds of consciousness. Confusion grips his face. "Do you recognize her?" I shake my head, but can't deny the instant connection I felt the moment she looked up at me with those pale blue eyes. She damn well seemed to know me.
You sure about that?
The question comes from Pierce, the accusation in his tone clear.
Maybe she's someone you and your brothers have encountered before.
The anger that's been on simmer since rushing through the hospital doors quickly ignites to a boiling point.
What the hell are you getting at, Pierce?
I know exactly what he's getting at, and I dare the motherfucker to say it. He shrugs.
Just wondering if this could be one of y'all's trysts. Maybe you got carried away this time.
You son of a bitch. I lunge forward, grabbing him by the shirt before my father and Craig intervene.
Knock it off, you two!
Craig manages to get between us, prying the bastard from my grip while my father holds me back. I point at Craig.
Get him the fuck out of my face before I rip his fucking throat out.
My father's grip tightens on my shoulders in warning.
That's enough, son. You're better than this.
His voice is stern, but his eyes are filled with patience and understanding. It calms the rage, something he's always been able to do for my brothers and me.
Go back to the station, Pierce, Craig orders. I'll deal with you later.
Pierce's jaw clenches, our glares locking until the very moment he leaves the room. My attention snaps to Craig.
What the hell were you thinking bringing him here?
You know I hate that piece of shit.
He stiffens at my tone.
He's all I had available, and it's protocol, all right?
Fuck protocol! He's as corrupt as Totter was, and you damn well know it.
Well, until I have evidence of that, my hands are tied. But I'm keeping an eye on him. You, on the other hand, need to keep your fucking cool.
He was out of line.
Yes, he was, and I'll deal with it. It won't happen again.
That's where he's wrong. I have no doubt it will. Pierce's accusation won't be the last, once the town gets wind of this. Hell, even the nurse thought I was responsible when we rushed in. Rumors have run rampant for years about my brothers and me, all because of a pact we made years ago, a bond we forged for Knox's sake. That bond behind closed doors is far more sacred than anyone realizes. Despite that, we are not into binding women and beating the shit out of them. The shrill sound of my father's phone breaks the moment.
Excuse me, I need to take this.
As he steps away, I drop into a chair, scrubbing a hand down my tired face. I can't fucking believe this is happening. Craig takes the spot next to me.
We'll get to the bottom of it. My men are combing through every inch of that place. If there is something to find, we'll find it.
Not for the first time am I thankful he's the sheriff of Winchester now. I have no doubt if Totter were still alive, I'd be behind bars before I even had a chance to explain. That asshole was always gunning for my brothers and me.
The best bullet we ever released was through the center of that bastard's skull.
My father returns moments later.
That was your brother's.
He pockets his phone before taking a seat on the other side of me.
They checked the surveillance cameras. There's nothing there.
Since the cameras only cover the entrance, I am not surprised they didn't see anything. However, the fact she was left near our property line in such a way to be found, yet far enough outside of it as to not trigger the alarm, has suspicion forming in my gut.
What are the chances this could be personal?
Craig asks, sensing my thought. My father shrugs.
I don't know how it could be, considering we don't even know this girl. But after what my family has gone through the past few months, I'm not ruling anything out.
He's talking about the founding families. Even though most are dead or in jail, some are still walking free, wreaking their quiet havoc in this town. That said, I have a feeling this doesn't have to do with them and the oil buried beneath our land, not by a long shot. Someone left her for us to find, I say, feeling my anger shift into something darker. Whatever it was by coincidence or more, doesn't matter. I'm taking it fucking personal. My father clasps my shoulder, sharing his agreement. In the hours of waiting for the doctor, Craig receives a few calls from his deputies, only to be told they found nothing. Not even a fucking footprint, which means the asshole covered his tracks well. Our only hope now is for our victim to shed some light on who the hell she is and how she ended up this way. By the time the doctor enters the waiting room, I'm practically crawling out of my skin. The nurse from earlier follows close behind him, her suspicious eyes directed right at me. I ignore them and focus only on the doctor.
Dr. Carver.
Craig greets him with a handshake, clearly knowing the man.
Sheriff?
How is she? I ask, not bothering with pleasantries. His gaze swings to mine,
my chest locking up tight as I await the verdict.
She's stable.
I let go of a heavy breath, what feels like the first one I've taken since finding her.
I won't lie. It was touch and go for a while. Her injuries are quite extensive.
How extensive? Craig asks. The doctor hesitates, flicking me a brief look.
Maybe it's best we talk about this in private?
I straighten at the apparent brush-off. Now hold on just a goddamn minute. I'm the one who found her. I have a right to know what happened.
He's right.
Craig speaks, backing me up. The Creeds are not suspects in this case. Any information you share with me will be shared with them anyway. The doctor nods.
I just wanted to be sure.
Nurse Bitch seems to disagree with the decision, if her pinched expression is anything to go by.
She has a few cracked ribs, a ruptured spleen, and quite the concussion. We also discovered prior fractures that were never properly treated.
He clears his throat before speaking again.
She's also quite scarred across her lower back and bottom. Not only is it obvious this girl has endured many years of abuse, I'm quite certain whoever left her there didn't expect her to survive.
Son of a bitch. I drive a hand through my hair, that blistering fury blooming within the darkest parts of my soul.
Signs of sexual trauma?
Craig asks, sending all of that rage plummeting to the pit of my stomach. My eyes fall closed as I prepare myself to hear the answer.
No.
My gaze snaps to the doctor, both shock and relief barreling through me. Considering the way her nightgown was, I assumed differently. By Craig's expression, it seems I'm not the only one.
You're certain about this?
I am. I ran several tests, and per my own examination, her hymen is still intact.
Another dose of surprise fills me, and I begin to wonder if the woman is younger than I initially thought.
When can I speak with her?
Craig asks.
I'd like to question her as soon as possible.
Well, I'm afraid that's going to be hard for you to do.
The doctor's change of tone has dread coiling around my chest like a vicious snake.
Why do you say that?
Craig asks.
Because she has no memory.
Excuse me? I jump back in, swearing I misheard him.
She was in and out of consciousness throughout the examination, most of the time confused and disoriented, but the last time she was awake long enough for me to ask questions, other than her first name, she doesn't know who she is, where she came from, or how she ended up this way.
Is that even possible? Craig asks. To remember her name but nothing else?
It is. We hold three different stages of memory: encoding, storage, and retrieval. Usually when someone suffers memory loss due to injury, they lose only one of them. However, when brought on by trauma, anything is possible. It all depends where her fear allows her mind to go.
So there's a chance she could regain her memory, I say.
It's very probable, but right now she is too afraid to remember anything. Considering what she has been through, I can understand why.
Craig blows out a heavy breath.
If it's all the same to you, Doctor, I'd still like to stick around and talk to her.
Of course. I've sedated her for the time being, but we'll alert you the moment she wakes up.
Thank you.
With nothing left to say, the doctor leaves us with our conflicted thoughts.
Well, this just keeps getting more fucked up by the second, Craig grumbles.
So, what do we do now?
My father asks.
There has to be a way we can help this girl.
There is, I say, taking a seat in one of the chairs. We wait. Craig shakes his head.
You go on home, I'll wait and call with any information.
I'm not going anywhere. Annoyance sparks in his eyes.
You heard what the doctor said. She can't give you any answers. Until she does, there's no point for you to be here.
That's where you're wrong, Craig. Until she regains her memory, she has no one. No family or friends. I'm the one who found her, which makes her my responsibility, and I'm not leaving her. We become locked in a stare down until he sees the resolution on my face. He knows me well enough not to argue.
All right, then, he concedes. Who wants coffee?
Chapter 3. Alice. Everything hurt. My mind, body, and most of all, my spirit. I feel scared, lost, and confused as I sit within these hospital room walls. The machines next to my bed beep with life, yet I feel dead inside. I awoke a short time ago having no recollection of anything, not even who I am or how I ended up this way. Anytime I tried to retreat into my mind, to grasp some kind of memory.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?